something that's really fun and cool going on right now, right this very minute. As promised, I've been giving you some teasers that I am about to have a co-host on the show. So guess what? You don't have to keep just looking at my face. I know it gets boring. I understand. That's why we're bringing on somebody. We're bringing on somebody smart who knows more of the things than I do. And his name is Clay Novak. He is a returning guest, now co-host. So, Clay, thank you so much for doing this with me. I appreciate it.
Well, I mean, obviously, thanks for the invitation. I had such a good time. You know, the first time we did this, however many months ago that was, and the opportunity to do this and co-host with you. I mean, who could turn that down? Really? Come on.
I love it. I kind of blindsided you, right? You were really gracious. And all you were looking for is just maybe to come on again and say, hey, and just do a spot. And I hit you with, hey, you want to be my co-host?
And again, how am I going to turn that down? It's a great show. Content is great. You're a blast. I mean, you and I have stayed in contact even since the last time I was on. And yeah, I reached out and was thinking maybe I could make a return appearance, and you made the offer. And, you know, I mean, I'm going to jump on that. Of course I am.
I love it. I love it. I'm so excited. And now I want to talk, I want to talk about you and, Man, you know, and I know I probably said this exact same thing last time, so it's kind of repetitive, and I'll show you all some clips in a few minutes. But Clay, you have done some wild, crazy, cool stuff. First of all, I want to thank you for your service. I reread a little bit of your bio. 5-tour combat veteran. That's crazy.
Yeah, correct. Yep.
That's crazy to me. So thank you for your service, first and foremost.
Well, so that, you know, I tell people this all the time. That is one of those uncomfortable things for a lot of veterans to hear. We are who we are. I tend to tell people my service was my pleasure, because it was. I didn't stay, you know, active duty in uniform for 24, 25 years because I disliked it. So, yes, my service was my pleasure. So thanks for saying that.
Absolutely. I know. And, you know, my husband's the same way. He, you know, it's not a love-hate relationship, right? It's just a discomfort, right? Because you're just doing what you think, you know, anybody would do. And of course, we know that's not true. Not anybody, just anybody would do it. It takes a really special kind of person to make that choice to, you know, put yourself at risk in the line of danger for, you know, for others, for something greater than yourself, and accepting the praise and the thanks. I understand that it's uncomfortable. Like I'm terrible at taking compliments. You know, if somebody says, oh, your hair looks nice, I'll be like, oh no, it looks terrible. So on a really small scale, I get it. It's kind of silly to compare those two things, but I did it.
Well, I appreciate it. And yes, you know, spread over a number of years, 5 trips. I did Afghanistan 3 times, Iraq twice. And, you know, I was in Afghanistan the first time way back in 2002. So it was very, very early. And then my last tour was, you know, I lose track of time, but I think it was 12, 13, late 12 and into early 13 was my last tour. So, you know, cram 3 more in between those two, that 10-year window. And then on top of it, I did a year in Korea. It was a busy time. It was a busy time for everybody in the military. I don't care what branch you were in. I don't care what job you had. I don't care what rank you were. It was busy for everybody. It was, you know, the height of the war and the density of it all. So I was there at the very, very beginning. And then I won't say I was there at the end, because I wasn't, but I was there pretty late in the game too. So.
Yeah. So you're such an asset to the show in so many ways. And, you know, one of them is you're going to be bringing so many valuable insights and understanding. You know, I love to have veterans on the show. I love to have, you know, any military personnel, you know, people sharing those stories. And I'm so grateful to have you on, because I'll be passing all of those interviews over to you. And just because you have such a better understanding, you're going to be able to ask better questions than I would. And I have no problem admitting that. You know, I'm good at throwing myself under the bus for things like that. So I'm really, really excited for that. And I think they're going to appreciate talking to you more than they will me.
You know, it's amazing. The veteran connection stuff is real. I mean, that is, it can't be understated, you know, two veterans, and I don't care. It doesn't just have to be, you know, folks of my era. It can be any two veterans from any era, any two separate eras. There's an instant connection. You speak the same language, and that breaks through a lot of barriers immediately. So, you know, it's just sometimes it's the shared misery of just the military, whatever it is that we have in common. It's an instant connection, and it makes things easier. So, I'm happy to take that on, or you know, contribute to that, you know, as the show goes forward.
That's awesome. And you're doing, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're kind of doing a lot of that stuff already. You're doing some media consulting and things like that, right?
I am. And some, you know, veteran benefit, altruistic stuff too. I've got, three different organizations that I'm working with, associated with right now, that serve specifically, veterans. Not, they're nonprofit veteran support organizations. They all do business very, very differently. I try to stay connected as much as I can. I do offer, you know, at times when given the ability to offer my experience, you know, as a point of relevance and provide input when asked. So, yeah, I've tried to stay on the bubble as much as I can and stay connected. You know, I've been retired for 4 years now, and we all somewhat have a shelf life. The further you get away from it, you know, the further you are from your relevance in time, I guess, for lack of a better term. But, you know, your service never goes away, and your ability to connect with veterans and serve veterans and those kinds of things, that never goes away. So happy to do that as well.
That's really, really cool. And you've got something cool coming up. So at the time, and I preface this for everybody when you watch this, so we're recording a little bit earlier, and we're still deciding if I'm going to give you little teasers or if we're going to just give you the whole episode. But at the time of recording, which is right now, you, Clay, are getting ready to do something that is in that lane. Tell everybody what you're about to do in what, about a week or so?
This coming weekend. Yes. Yeah. So in 4 or 5 days, I guess I will be doing one of the things that I love to do, and probably the number one thing I miss about the military, and that is exiting an aircraft under a canopy. I was a paratrooper for 10 years while I was on active duty. And it's something that I always loved to do. It was as painful as, because the military, don't get me wrong, can take the fun out of just about anything. And parachuting in the military can be not fun at times, but I always loved it. And in retirement, I found, and again, it's one of those veteran support organizations. It's called the Phantom Airborne Brigade. It's a bunch of guys based out of Florida. They do military round canopy, static line style parachuting with military parachutes. And your only requirement is to be a military trained paratrooper. To be part of the organization. So I've jumped with them 4 times now. I'm going down this weekend for my 5th jump with the organization. It'll be number 82 overall for me. But it goes back to what we were talking about before. You know, I jumped with them for the first time about a year ago, a little over a year ago. Didn't know anybody when I showed up there. And within 10 minutes felt like I was back home again. Mm-hmm. Literally walk in. It's a bunch of paratroopers from every era. And within, you know, just a few minutes, I had 20 brand new friends.
Camaraderie, right? That shared experience, that bonding is
absolutely
like nothing else, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So now we're going to be showing a clip here. And so the clip that we're going to be showing, of course, you know which one I'm talking about, is from exactly what you're talking about with this group, right?
That is correct. Yep. Okay. This is from a few months past, but yes, this is the Phantom Airborne Brigade conducting an airborne operation out of a vintage World War II D-Day used C-47 aircraft. So it actually dropped paratroopers. The Tico Bell is the name of the airplane, and we work with it all the time. And again, dropping it exited paratroopers, and actually, if I remember correctly, towed a glider on one pass for D-Day. So there's, you know, you can see the repaired holes in the fuselage. They're still there. It still flies. But yes, this is a daytime parachute operation with the Phantom Airborne Brigade.
All right. How about that? I've watched this a few times now, and every time, just before you go out that door, I hold my breath and I actually feel I feel a little queasy So clearly I won't be doing a jump anytime soon. You know, somebody, a lot of people actually, when I was turning 50, which was, a little while ago, I put it out there. I said, what do you guys think I should do for my 50s? Should I do something crazy? You know, and everybody always says the same damn thing, jump out of a plane. And I'm like, should I really do that? Should I do it? Because I mean, a lot of people are saying you should do. I did not do that.
I'm creeping up on my 50th. It's coming very, very soon. And my plan when I retired from the military was to do that because I didn't know about this organization. And I said, you know, all the years that I jumped on active duty and I loved it so much that when I turn 50, I'm going to go back and I'm going to jump again. Well, I'm already jumping again. So now I got to figure out something else crazy to do for my
50. I know. How are you going to top that?
I don't know.
Shoot out of a cannon with fire or something. I mean,
I like it. It's a good idea. I'm going to come back to you. You're going to give me all kinds of crazy ideas and I'll figure out what I'm going to do.
Your wife is going to kill me for that. Yeah. She's like, that's it. You're not hanging out with her anymore. She's trouble. Yeah. Oh man. So yeah, you're doing some fun. Boy, you're making me feel really lame. I sit around in my basement, like a basement troll and maybe go out to my garden, feed my birds, not jumping out of planes. I am going to leave that to you. But if you ever decide, I'll put it this way. Here's like the compromise, because I feel like it'll never happen. If you start your own company, you know, for civilians to do jumps, then I will jump out of a plane because I'll feel safe with you. Like I know you, I'll be like, oh, okay, I'm going with Clay. Okay, we're good. So
Elsa, I can assure you that that is never going to happen. So you're perfectly safe. Yes.
Phew. That's such a relief. I think I like broke out in a little bit of a sweat as I was saying it. Like
not
my
a chance.
Voice was going, you dummy, shut up. Don't
no,
say
not,
things you have
not
to
a chance. You're good.
Oh, good, 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 good. So now on top of all this, you're like, well, listen, jumped out of planes. You know, I'm a veteran. I've done all kinds of things. What should I do next? Oh, I think I'll write a book. Tell everybody a little bit about your book.
So I wrote a novel. It's an action fiction, military fiction, suspense thriller. It fits into a whole bunch of categories, but it's called Keep Moving, Keep Shooting. If you're a fan of the genre, the Jack Reacher, Jack Ryan, Jason Bourne style stories, this is definitely in that window. I wrote it as part of my transition as I left the military with no intent to publish, which obviously it ended up publishing. But it's the main character is named Terry Davis. He's a retired Army officer, go figure. And he's retired and he's looking for the quiet life and that's his intent. But he finds himself in the middle of something that at first seems off and then very rapidly becomes a somewhat dire situation. And it just continues to build throughout the entirety of the novel and ends up being a potential threat to national security. So if that's your jam, that's what you're going to get out of it. And it's the things that I hear from everybody when they finish are one, very quick read. I hear that from everybody. One or two sittings. It's less than 300 pages. So it moves quickly. So I hear very quick read. I never saw that ending coming. So there's a little teaser for you. And then the last thing that I hear is when is it going to be on the screen? When is it going to be made into a movie or into a series or something like that? Because that everyone says that it's very visual when they read it. And they can very clearly picture the things and it plays a very good story when they read it. So that's where we're at. I've sold about 600-ish copies of the book. Today I got my 75th review on Amazon.
Nice.
It's doing pretty well. 71 of the 75 are 5 stars.
Yes.
So the fans are loving it. The other 4 are 4 stars. I'm not complaining. Don't get
no,
me wrong.
No, those are great.
But yeah, so it's a 4.9 rating on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it through Barnes & Noble. Every format, ebook, Kindle format, hardcover, softcover, it's all out there. So that's where we're at. And the goal is, it's not a well-kept secret anymore. It was when I was on your show initially, but the sequels are done. Sequel 2, number 2 in the series is done. Number 3 is done. I I jumped back into number four the other night. There's a good portion of number four written. So that's the intent, is to turn it into a full-fledged series that people can really get into, and it's a long-term story.
That's so stinking cool. Now, did you, when you started, before you even started writing, when you were in the thinking about it process of writing a book, not necessarily specifically this book that you ended up writing, when you started that whole thought process, did you know that you were going to write a fiction book, or were you thinking?
No, and so as I was getting ready to transition out of the military, I had a couple of tours, some retired general officers that told me, and they both used the same word. They said creative. They said, find something creative to do to keep your brain engaged. And no offense to anybody working in the civilian sector, but, you know, the concern for a lot of veterans, and it is a concern, is that, you know, we are 24/7, 365. You very rarely get to shut off, and we work at a very high tempo all the time. So when you transition from the military to the civilian sector, you know, your brain activity just naturally goes down. It's just, you're not as engaged as much, and it is what it is. So they said, find something to do. And they both said, find something creative to do. I never considered myself a creative person. I don't paint. I don't sculpt. I don't, you know, I can do some basic carpentry stuff. I'm not a furniture maker. But a good friend of mine in the Army said, you know, hey, you were a really good staff writer. You always wrote really well. So, you know, you should think about, you know, maybe, you know, you did, you know, like a lot of us at the time, he's like, you did a bunch of tours. You did a bunch of time over there. Why don't you start writing some stories? And he was thinking a nonfiction, you know, Clay Novak's war stories book. And, you know, truthfully, nobody wants to hear that. Not out of me anyway. So I kind of shelved that. But my best friend is a TV writer, and what he's TV writer, producer, director kind of guy. And he's been in the business for a number of years. And he said, write fiction, man. Try it. He goes, there's no rules. You can write whatever you want. You want to write space. You want to write microbiology. You want to write, you know, whatever you want to write. There's no rules. Fantasies, like people. He goes, look at Harry Potter. You know, that's a complete, it's a world, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, so he advised me to try fiction. So I started writing with, again, no intent to publish and really no intent to write a novel. Mm-hmm. I was just writing to write, and I pieced it together. I was writing, you know, catch as catch can, 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, you know, waiting for a meeting. I did, when I retired, I transitioned in the civilian business sector, which I just hated. You know, I take my lunch, and I always, you know, kind of typical Army style, I ate my lunch at my desk. I very rarely went out to lunch. I was, you know, but I would write. I'd write for 15 minutes here, 10 minutes there. And slowly this, you know, novel started to form. I took a break for a while, got away from it. Things got busy, and then got back to it a number of months later and reread what I wrote, and then finished, got about 2/3 of the way through it. And I'm like, Let's see if I can finish this novel, you know? So I did, I finished it. And you know, you're the one, I actually learned this term from you. I'm a pantser.
You're a pantser.
I had never heard that before, and you taught me. So I had no arc. I had no plan. I had no outline. I was just writing, and the story was forming in my head. And the follow-on books were the same way.
That's awesome.
So I finished it. I gave it to my dad, my best friend. They both read it, and then it sat for a year. And my best friend, the TV writer, said, "Hey, man, nobody writes a 300-page novel and doesn't do anything with it." Like, so then I went through the process of getting it published, and you know, I went through it's a hybrid publish book, mm-hmm. so you know, a smaller publishing company. You know, they did all the hard work, the editing and the cover design and ISBN numbers.
That's
and
huge.
You know, getting it wired into distribution and being printed and all that stuff that I didn't want to take on. And
yeah, it's all a pain in the ass. Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
It really is.
I looked into self-publishing. I really did, and I was like, no desire. Yeah. So
it's a lot.
Got in with them, and you know, that's, and it's been on sale for, let's see, December. What is it now? August. So, you know, eight months or so now.
That's awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, the reviews alone, to get reviews like that, I mean, that's not easy. It's not easy to get, like, usually like begging people to review, and people are always like, oh, yeah, totally going to do it. Nobody gets around. So reviews are hard to come by. So that's, you know, those are definitely worth their weight in gold, you know, just to get, that's a lot of reviews. So that says a lot, really, really cool. I love that it's going to potentially, let's manifest here. I love that it's going to become either a movie or series or something. I think that's really, really cool. See how I just decided.
I love your positive attitude. I do. Love it.
This is how I see, you're noticing very quickly, I'm sure. This is how I do everything. I just decide this is how it's going to be. This is what will happen. Hi, Clay. Want to be my co-host? Yeah. Here it is.
Yes. I'm sensing a pattern here.
There is a pattern. So that's good. Why I feel like, you know, I feel like I have the authority to to say that's going to happen. Not too soon, though, because then I'll lose you to that. And then, you know, then I'll be sitting here talking to myself again. So
no way. I'm committed.
I would never not wish success on you. So I take that last part back. So they're going to be wanting to know, the people who watch the show, they're going to be like, so this guy Clay that Kooky Elsa has on, you know, where does he stand on the issues, on stuff and things? And I just want to tell everybody that I did not bring on a bleeding heart liberal for my co-host. I think everybody already guessed that. I think
probably, yeah.
You know, probably understood that. So let's talk for a couple minutes. I'm not even paying attention to time. See, this is what happens. I'm not even paying it. We're okay. We're good.
So that'll be my job, I guess.
Yes.
I'm going to have to buy a big clock. I'm going to have to put it on the wall where I can see it.
Yes. Can you be in charge of that?
I can be in charge of time.
So nice. Oh, my relief factor just went. Yeah, and you could be like, Elsa, no, just.
Yeah.
We're done.
Just, we're going to figure out like a chat function where I can just tell you to knock it off.
Yes, we need that. Yes, I think we do have it. I think we do have it. Yeah, there's a little chat. Good. I'm so excited. Yeah, guys, we're like working out our plan right on air with you. In front of your very eyes. But so just before we got on, I was taking a quick look because I started wondering, I was like, geez, who has already thrown their hat in, you know, definitively for the 2024 presidential run? And I looked and I was kind of surprised that there's only, at this moment, as far as I can read, only three definites on the Democrat side. And of course, that's Biden. And I'm already forgetting who the other two is. Biden. Oh, Kennedy. And a woman, Marianne something, I'm forgetting her name, Marianne Williams, I think her name is. And we have like 13 people on the Republican side that have thrown their hat in. It's kind of crazy, right?
I mean, truthfully, to have three, you know, two more challenging the incumbent, I mean, that says something in and of itself.
Yeah.
To have 13, maybe it's early to have 13 on the challenging ticket. But 13, you know, in the early stages is, I don't think that's all that uncommon, because you're going to have four or five of those. They're going to figure out very quickly that they can't get the financial support to do anything. And they're going to fade away before they gain any momentum at all. So,
I saw like four of them that I wrote off like immediately. I'm like, I don't even know. I don't know who you are. Never heard of you.
Yeah.
Don't like your face. Yeah. You're out. So, yeah. So that's interesting, because I really didn't know, like, is this a normal amount of people to see throwing their hats in, basically?
I think 2 years out, it's probably early for 13 people. But again, you're going to see that, you're going to see some deletions, and then you're going to see some ads. So I think, you know, when all is said and done, somewhere 10 to 12, I think, in the earliest stages, probably for whether it's Iowa. Whether it remains Iowa, I know that's, you know, kind of a weird up for grabs thing. But, you know, when Iowa rolls around, to have 12, you know, 10 to 12 on the ticket, I don't think is out of the realm of norm. But I do think that to have two challengers, but one serious challenger, because I think Kennedy is about as serious a challenger as you can have for the incumbent. I mean, for the sitting president, to have somebody who's that aggressively campaigning against him from his own party is, I can't remember the last time that happened.
No, same. And, you know, so Kennedy, man, he's an interesting dude, really interesting guy. I'm, I mean, how is he going to get the support of his party? Because his party hates him, right? I mean, they're terrified of him.
You know, I think, you know, he's taken a risk, I think, yeah. in that the opinion of the president, even inside of his own party, and I think probably it's an indicator of what's being said behind closed doors, potentially, is that, he, you know, outwardly, there's all kinds of support. Inwardly, that may not, in fact, be true. And let's be honest, he's a Kennedy. You know, there's a lot of gravitas that comes with that name inside Definitely. The Democratic Party, right? Mm-hmm. So if nobody else is going to challenge the president, President Biden, then, you know, he might as well take a run at it, because I think it is, again, a good indicator that he may not have as much support as people believe he does inside the party.
Right.
You know, I think it's clear. Oh, by the way, the vice president, your favorite person on the planet.
My favorite.
She provides you so much material. She's not helping. I mean, she's not a, you know, she's actually probably hurting the president as much as anything, because everyone knows, listen, I politics aside, his health issues are not, that's not something to be scoffed at. Right.
Right.
I think, you know, his age, you know, clearly there's some questions about his mental, you know, mental faculties, his capabilities, and to see that what is coming behind him, you know, if he steps down,
right,
some unfortunate medical incident happens and she becomes the president, that's not a promising proposition.
No,
I just saw a thing today. She's the least popular vice president since they've been running polls about the vice president, because for a long time, nobody really cared.
Right.
But for as long as they've been doing it, she's the least popular vice president in history.
And you know, the thing that gets me, Clay, here's the thing that just blows my mind, and it shouldn't anymore. I should not have a surprise bone left in my body, but I do. And you know, my videos, you know, my content, the stuff that I put out, the, of course, like we just said, the Kamala Harris impressions and everything, which, by the way, about 85% of the time is literally just me repeating exactly verbatim what she said, you know, and people Great like, material. You know, people easy. From the left, they're like all mad at me. Like, that's not nice to make fun of her. I'm just repeating what she said. Like, exact I'm just order. Telling you exactly what she said. So, you know, don't be mad at me, be mad at her for saying something so dumb. And, but these people are like, they come in the comments and they're like, she is a wonderful vice president. She is very smart. And it's like, where are these people getting their information? Like, even with a skewed mainstream media who loves to paint the picture that they sure. want to paint, and not yeah. like, even with that, to sit there as a rational thinking human being and listen to her, the words that come out of her mouth, and to sit there and go, gosh, she's really smart, is mind blowing to me. And yet there they are in my comments section.
And listen, you know, in our lifetime, you know, think back to some of the vice presidents who weren't great speakers.
Yeah.
Dan Quayle. It's mm-hmm. the first one from our lifetime, right?
Yes.
And what did they do? They minimized exposure,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, clearly minimized exposure.
Right.
That's what you do as the White House, as the administration. They, you know, Dan Quayle's a smart guy. I know he mm-hmm. misspelled tomato, potato, whatever yeah. it was. But I mean, he's a smart guy.
Right.
He may just maybe not a great public speaker. So utilize his talents in a different way. Keep mm-hmm. him behind the scenes. Keep him working things administratively, policy type decisions, those kinds of things. But don't put him in the limelight. Right. Nobody has figured out in the White House to not put her in front of a camera. And it's yeah. too late. The cat's out of the bag.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody knows, right?
Right.
And if I think a change in tactics for them at this point, it would be almost as damaging, mm-hmm. you know, like where the vice president.
It's true. You can't, you know? They know they can't put Joe out there any more than they already do.
Yeah.
You know, that every time is a risk and a fail. Like every sure. single time, he has not gotten through a single public appearance without saying or doing something that is, you know, at the very least eyebrow raising.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then there's her with her word salads and, you know, and I don't know, I guess whoever her staff writer is or her team of writers or herself, it's got to be writers, which is even more bizarre. But she just recycles, you know, the same speeches, you know, her unburdened. You know, we have videos of her saying.
Did you see the latest one? The community banking?
Banks are in the community because they serve the communities where the banks. It's like, come on. Like, is this real life? I always feel like we're getting punked. You remember that show from the 90s?
Yes.
I feel like we're getting punked all the time with this. And, you know, but again, none of it scares me more than the people that jump into my comment because they represent a portion of our society. They're going, he's a wonderful president and there's no scandals, not like Orange Bad Man, you know, and that's their answer to everything, by the way. If, you know, take a stroll through any comment section of any conservative figure, person, whatever, and social media. And I could literally go on there and I can make a video about the weather, you know, it's, you know, we're having a wonderful day. Well, you know, thanks to Trump, we have global warming. It's just, you know, it's crazy. Now, speaking of Trump, we've got over on the Republican side, we've got Trump, we've got DeSantis, we've got Pence, we've got Larry Elder, we've got Vivek. Let's see if I can do it. Ramaswamy. I think I did it right.
I think that's about right.
I think so. Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, and then those other ones that I've already written off as going to be gone before you can even blink. I wasn't happy about DeSantis running because I wanted him to wait. What are your feelings on that whole drama?
So, you know, it's interesting because, you know, the Trump base is as deep and as solid as it is.
Yeah.
So if he chooses not to run, which I don't think is going to happen. I don't think that his personality or his ego will allow. He's already committed to it, and then once he says it out loud, there's no turning back.
That's it. Not gonna show that.
But for whatever reason, if he is not in the race come election day, the person who has his endorsement is the winner, for lack of a better term.
Sure.
But I think strategically for the Republican Party, that, you know, the decision is he the most likely to win? And I don't know the answer to that. I wrote a blog. That's another thing I do. And if you ever read it, you'll find out that I just hold everybody accountable. I don't care what political party they're in. If they're
I like that. That's what we need. That's what we need.
I call them out for it all the time.
I like that.
But a third party candidate in this election would turn things on its head completely.
Yeah.
Because there are so many people who are, you know, whether they're never Trumpers, right? So no matter what, if he runs, they're going to vote against him. It doesn't matter who's on the
yeah, it could be a potato ticket, and they'll vote for the potato. Yeah.
And then there's so many people now who are the same way about President Biden.
Right.
Because they see what he is incapable of and where his health is heading. And oh, by the way, who's sitting in the vice president's office, right? They will vote against him purely because they don't want, it's not whoever's on the Republican ticket. They're not voting for them. They're voting against the sitting president. And again, there's so many people voting against, you know, former President Trump that middle right now, I think, is actually growing. And it's a good thing. Because you remember when we were young, the fight was for the middle. You'll always have the deep blue and the deep red, right? Nobody has to fight for those votes. They're gimmies. It was the middle, which was a fairly large portion of the population in the United States.
Huge portion. And I really don't understand why we're not a louder voice. Yeah.
That's who the candidates were fighting for, was the middle. And I think that middle is growing, but it's growing in a weird way. Like I said, it's the opposite. It's the, I'm not voting for him. I'll vote for whoever else, but I'm not voting for him. And that goes in both directions. So the Republican ticket is going to be very, very interesting. You know, I have preferences, which, you know, at this point, I'm not going to say to anybody because it's just not worth it.
Right. No matter what you say, somebody will fight you over
it. And there's 13. So, you know,
yeah,
from now until 2 years from now, you know, they're going to weed themselves out.
And very true.
It'll go down. So, but it's going to be a very interesting election in the next.
There's a lot going to happen
in the next 2 years between now and then.
Yes. I saw something interesting. It was like kind of partially funny, partially interesting, and just partially curious. I was scrolling through something or other, one of the platforms, and Roseanne Barr was on somebody's podcast, and they made a bet about the 2024 elections. And she said, she was very adamant, and I don't know why, I didn't watch the whole thing, but she believes that there is not even going to be an election. So she obviously believes that there's, you know, some crazy stuff afoot. And, you know, if somebody said something like that 5 years ago, we would have just laughed and said, okay, she's a little bonkers. And, you know, it's very sad that we're in a day and age where you kind of take a pause for a second and go, would not be out of the realm of things that I can imagine in the world.
They said it in 2022. It was not prevalent, but there were people leading up to 2022 that were saying, oh, that's how Trump's going to stay in power. He's going to stay in the White House.
I remember.
He's going to shut down the election. It was noise, and it was a lot of, you know, people took it as fringe, like, oh, that guy said he's crazy. You know what I mean? Like anybody.
Yeah.
But you're right. Now we think about it, you know, 3 years removed from that, and we go, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm listening.
We've seen a lot of things happen.
Yeah.
This would not be impossible.
No.
But, I don't know about you, but I am an optimist. I'm a realist and an optimist. Can you be both? I don't know if you can be both, but I'm deciding.
Sure.
That you're going to be a real. Yeah, of course you can. Right. You're a realist. You know how things are. They don't surprise you. But you're also hopeful. Yeah, that works. That works. I had to like really think about that for a minute. Yeah. Yes. Okay. We're good. But yeah, I mean, definitely cautious optimism here as to what's going to happen.
Sure.
But you know, you made a really great point about the whole middle class. I mean, we really are our voice. I count myself among that, you know, that, I mean, we really have to start making our voices really be heard and you know, make our voices heard with our votes, and not by, like you said, not by the lesser of the evils. You know, you hear
right.
that a lot, right? Like, well, I'm just going to go vote. I'm only voting for the lesser. They don't really like this one, but he's the lesser of the evil, so I'm going to go with that one. And you know, because I'm such a vocal conservative, everyone from the left that comments on my stuff automatically assumes that means I'm a Trumper, you know, so or ultra MAGA. And, you know, it's not true or untrue. I'm for whoever I think is going to be the best for our country. And I don't really care. I don't care what party they're actually from,
right.
You know, as long as I believe that they are what's best for this country, that's what I'm going to vote for. And that may or may not be Trump at that time. And, you know, I don't know. And I probably just pissed off a whole bunch of, you know, Trumpists. Sorry, guys. But, you know, I don't.
2 years is a long way away, Elsa.
A long way. Thank goodness. It's a long way. People, hopefully their grudges won't last as long as they've already tuned out. They're like, what? You don't.
Yep.
Here's not the greatest thing.
Skip, delete.
Yep. Bye. All right. Okay. So listen, I could keep going on. I keep you on here all damn day doing this. But lucky for us, we've got so many more of these episodes upcoming and exciting things to talk about. Great topics. Clay is going to bring all kinds of stuff to the table for us. And you're not going to just hear me going blah, blah, blah all the time. So I'm super excited. Hopefully Clay is super excited.
I am for sure.
Yes. And I know you guys watching are super excited for all of this. We're getting a lot of really fun stuff coming on over the course of the fall. And so stay tuned. I will keep throwing stuff in your face to remind you to come watch, to subscribe to the show so you get notifications when we're doing something new and exciting to talk to you guys. Clay, anything you want to tell everybody before we sign off for today?
Yeah, again, very excited to be here. I hope to add to the show.
You're going to keep it under control. You're going to keep this show in line.
Yeah. If I'm subtracting from the show, I'm not doing my job. So, but I'm now in charge of time. We've made that adjustment. And I will keep both of us on track as best I can, but no, I'm super excited and very appreciative of the opportunity. I think that this dynamic is going to be a lot of fun. You obviously have a great sense of humor and, but you're very, focused on the things that you want to address. And, you know, I think we're going to be great sounding boards for each other. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. I'm really, really excited. If I haven't said that already like 500 times, I'm really, really excited, guys. Listen, I thank you all for joining us in our premiere episode. We're going to call it our premiere episode. Why not? And, we look forward to seeing you in the next ones, guys. Take care and we will see you soon.